podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
The East African Communities Medicines Regulatory Harmonization Initiative seeks to improve the region's capacity to regulate medical products and increase patient access to quality, safe, and efficacious medical products. In August of 2020, PLOS Medicine presented a special regulatory harmonization collection that overviewed this initiative across five articles published with the East Africa Community Member States and ESC Secretariat, the African Union Development Agency, the World Health Organization, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as collection partners. I am David Mukanga, a Senior Program Officer, Regulatory Affairs Africa Systems at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I also serve as regional editor for Africa for DIA Global Forum. I am honored to be joined today by Dr. Margaret Sigonda, Head of Health Programs for the New Partnership for Africa's Development, the Development Agency of the African Union, which is more recently known as the African Union Development Agency, AUDA. Thank you for joining us today, Margaret, and welcome.
Thank you.
Margaret and I are co-authors on several of these papers, and we're looking forward to discussing these topics today. So my first question to you, Margaret, what role did AUDA play or is playing in the ESC Regulatory Harmonization Initiative?
Thank you very much, David, for allowing me to be part of this conversation. When it comes to the ESC Medicines Regulatory Harmonization Initiative, and when we look at the AUDA NEPAD's role in advancing the African Medicine Regulatory Harmonization Initiative, I think it's very important to first consider the different phases AUDA NEPAD went through, because it has an implication in the way we have been engaging the countries and regional economic communities during the period in which we've been implementing the initiative. The AUDA initially, as an African strategic framework for socio-economic development of the continent, it was established in that to assist African countries to spearhead the socio-economic development agenda. And therefore, through the secretariat that was established then, the NEPAD played more of an administrative role to ensure that AU member states are able to advance their socioeconomic agenda. But by 2010, the mandate of the AUDA, the then New Partnership for Africa's Development, changed from a secretariat to a planning and coordinating agency, which was basically designated as an AU technical body. And this is where its core mandate actually was to facilitate and coordinate the implementation of regional and continental priority programs and projects, and also to push for partnerships, resource mobilization, research and knowledge management with focus on several thematic areas, including health. And it was during this time when we were able to first convene the AU member states, medicines regulatory agencies, and regional economic communities to come together primarily to discuss how best we could advance the issues around fragmented regulatory systems on the continent and how they're impacting on access to medical products to the patients on the continent. It was through this consultation that we were able to convene with member states. Then we were able to come up with this initiative, the MRH initiative, which basically was an agreement for countries to be able to address regulatory challenges on the continent. We needed to take a stepwise approach to bring them together through this regional platform and essentially harmonize registration of medical products as an entry point, while slowly would move into addressing some other regulatory challenges that the countries were facing. So it was through this process that the AUDA NEPAD, of course, then it was NEPAD, played a role of coordinating the development of these regional medicines regulatory harmonization projects for all the regions across the continent. It was open for all the regional economic communities, but of course, eventually it was very clear that EAC project was found and it was found to be viable for funding. So we had to focus all our attention into the EAC process, and eventually we were able to come up with a full-fledged project proposal. I should also mention here that as we were supporting the EAC project proposal write-up, it was also very clear that we were doing this as an AU body as part of the Pharmaceutical Manufacturing Bank for Africa, which basically serves as a framework to enable local pharmaceutical manufacturing to facilitate access to quality, safe, and effective medical products, which are essential for a robust healthcare delivery system. This is where we came in. Through the AU policy framework, we were able to support the EAC to develop the proposal and eventually to continue supporting coordination and advocacy throughout the process. Lastly, I should also mention here that by 2019, the AUDA NEPAD mandate also changed. So now it has been transformed into the African Union Development Agency to ensure the realization and the attainment of the Agenda 2063, which is basically a Pan-African vision of an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa and a strategic framework for Africa's long-term socio-economic and integrative transformations. So basically, our mandate has been broadened. We are looking into a bigger picture as to how best can we assist countries to advance their socio-economic development agenda, but also to ensure that there is collaboration and support to the African-led initiative to ensure that we achieve the aspirations of the African people.
Margaret, thank you very, very much for giving that very clear context in terms of the role that the African Union, AUDA, have been playing in helping set up the ESCMRH initiative. Can you speak a little bit, Margaret, to your role as the African Union and AUDA in terms of ensuring that these regional initiatives continue to grow and have impact, not just in the ESC, but across the entire continent?
The AUDA role was to facilitate development of these projects, but what is key also was to ensure that there is proper coordination of various stakeholders and partners, but also cross-regional coordination to ensure that there is coherence and harmony in terms of what each of the key stakeholders were doing in this initiative. So we played the coordination role. We played the advocacy role to ensure that there's also visibility and increasing understanding by policymakers on the value that this regional harmonization initiative brings when it comes to promoting public health, but also when it comes to ensuring access to medical products. So that's basically the role that we have played all along over the period of more than 10 years now.
As we all know, this year, COVID has been a pandemic that has changed our lives and changed a lot of the things that we all have been doing. Could you describe how this MRH initiative has helped regulators and industry respond to COVID-19, particularly in the ESC?
So when it comes to the role that the MRH initiative has played in response to COVID-19, it's also very important to start with how the initiative is structured. As we work with the regional economic communities, in this case, EAC, we have structures that have been established there. We have technical working groups that are composed of experts from member states that would be working on specific areas of expertise. But also we have steering committees composed of heads of agencies that provide oversight on these regional projects. When we are confronted with COVID-19, we had to see how best we can use the existing structures regionally, but also at continental level, we have technical committees that are responsible for various streams of work and also a steering committee at continental level. So what we did was to firstly identify areas that needed support by the member states. And in this case, we had issues around COVID-19 medical devices, in vitro diagnostics, and personal protective equipment that were in high demand. But at the same time, we had cases where there was need to conduct some studies to determine which products would be useful for COVID-19. And therefore, we had to constitute the technical committees. The first committee that was constituted to address these issues was the African Medical Devices Forum, which is responsible to provide technical guidance on matters related to medical devices and in vitro diagnostics. So through that and through a task force that was established by then we were able to come up with some guidance documents on regulation of medical devices, in vitro diagnostics, and PPEs to assist member states, especially when it comes to marketing authorization, when it comes to importation, procurement, and of course, manufacturing of COVID-19 medical products. And these guidelines were issued, were circulated to all the member states and regional economic communities. And in this case, EAC was very proactive in terms of making sure that the guidelines went through the respective expert working group and eventually were adopted by the EAC steering committee so that member states would be able to use such guidelines. So we are thankful to the EAC structures that they were very proactive and they were able to use these guidelines promptly. We have another steering committee. This is the African Vaccines Regulatory Forum, AVARE, which is coordinated by WHO and is also responsible for providing technical oversight on clinical trials for vaccines and other products. Because of COVID-19, again, we realized the need of convening this AVARE technical committee, and they've had several meetings to guide member states on how best to manage clinical trials for vaccines and therapies for COVID-19. What was very unique about AVARE was the set of guidelines that were already issued under the AVARE structure, because this is a continental technical working group, and therefore the guidelines that were developed and approved were already under domestication by the regional economic communities, and therefore it formed a very good basis for the regions and countries to uptake those guidelines to be able to provide oversight on ethics and scientific review of clinical trial applications by ethics committee and, of course, by the national agencies. Of particular importance was the guideline for emergency preparedness. I think this was very useful in the sense that it allowed the secretariat, that is WHO, to be able to engage countries to see how best they could now be able to manage the applications for clinical trials, but also to be able to do joint reviews in a way that eventually would facilitate faster approval of COVID-19 products.
What has been the response of the industry, whether it is in terms of clinical development of products for COVID or using some of these to deliver PPE and so on? What do you think the benefit has been to industry in terms of a lot of this work that you've done around COVID?
What I see as a benefit to the industry is, first of all, the knowledge that there is already harmonized guidance documents that would facilitate submission of dossiers, consideration by respective either national agencies or regional economic communities. I think that has been of so much value because it really reduces the burden for submission of multiple applications in different formats, and therefore it has made life quite easier when it comes to industry submitting these applications for either clinical trials or general marketing authorization for medical devices or in vitro diagnostics and PPEs as well. And actually, we've also seen cases where if there was no guidance document in place, where the regulators and industry were able to quickly come together using WHO guidance documents as a reference to agree on what minimum requirements they needed to meet for them to be able to either manufacture or market products in respective jurisdictions. So I think this has been very useful because guidelines were already there, so it was very easy to adapt based on the local needs.
So from the ESC collection that was published in PLOS Medicine, the ESC Medicines Regulatory Harmonization Initiative is poised to transition from a donor-funded pilot project into a self-sustaining permanent feature of the African regulatory landscape. So let's talk a little bit about that vision and the aspiration. From your perspective, what regulation or harmonization efforts in Africa would benefit the most from an immediate infusion of financial resources? Which ones would you consider to be low-hanging fruit that should be supported and funded?
For me, what I see as low-hanging fruits in this process is the fact that we already have guidance documents in place. We have continental guidance, for example, I mentioned AVAREF, but also guidelines for medical devices and in vitro diagnostics have been issued and domesticated in some of the member states. For me, if we are able to advocate for domestication and use of such guidelines by all the member states, it will add a lot of value because then it will facilitate the regional joint review processes. But also the regional joint inspection processes also will be facilitated in a way that make it easier to review and eventually approve products by member states, and especially during emergencies, but also post-emergencies. We already have some good guidance documents that need to be implemented by member states. The issue is, can we reach out to all the member states to make sure that they use such guidelines in a way that would facilitate the approval process? That's the issue that I thought maybe it will add a lot of value and a low-hanging fruit when it comes to what we have done so far on the Air Marriage Initiative.
Does the AU and the ESC Secretariat contribute funding to this initiative, particularly in the ESC, in terms of the AU, perhaps more broadly across the Air Marriage Initiative?
It works either in the as AU or EAC, these intergovernmental bodies that have been constituted by respective member states. So the main contribution is the member states' contributions that we do rely on. When it comes to our contribution, basically those are the main sources of funding that we rely on, either through the EAC policy structures or through the African Union policy structures. But also we have budgetary allocations by the NMRIs. Also, they do contribute for their participation in these regional medicines regulatory harmonization initiatives. So those are the main ones. Other than that, we also rely on donor funding when it comes to our support to these initiatives, either at regional or continental levels.
How has industry and the regulatory community in East Africa and the rest of Africa responded to these initiatives to make these harmonization efforts sustainable, funding-wise? Are you seeing enthusiasm to make them sustainable? Are you seeing enthusiasm for people to step forward and contribute in different ways to make them sustainable?
There is variation in terms of their response when it comes to local industry as compared to multinational companies. For multinational companies, because they are used to these CTD formats for submission of applications in different markets, they have found it easier, and actually they were more enthusiastic to say that this is a viable option for us to be able to access these markets by using these harmonized requirements and, of course, CTD format application. When it comes to local industry, it was a bit difficult for them to accept the new formats because it meant more stringent requirements, and therefore it wasn't taken very easily or very smoothly. But over time, we see that increased engagement of the industry has helped them to understand the value that this brings and therefore their participation. It's a matter of continuous engagement that we need to put in place to ensure that eventually, because of the value of this regional process that it brings in terms of facilitating faster approval, then therefore it will be easier for them even to accept paying fees for application through the regional process. If you look at what had happened in EAC, I think initially you would see it was mostly multinational companies that were submitting application to the regional joint review processes compared to what you found from the local industries. It's a process that we are going through. It is positive. I think it's just a matter of time that we'll see that eventually the local industry is also playing a bigger role in this process.
In terms of the sustainability, self-sustainability discussion, which was a big feature of the ESC roadmap from the papers that were published, do you see any roadblocks remaining in terms of the ESC and other regions becoming self-sustainable? And what would be your reflections on how these regions might overcome some of these barriers and obstacles?
when it comes to self-sustaining this initiative, the main roadblock that I see is for member states to take ownership of this process and to include these regional harmonization activities in their annual budgets. But also, they also need to take leadership in the harmonization process, especially by heads of agencies, because what I'm seeing now is a situation where some heads of agencies see this as an external thing. It's not home-driven, and therefore that can pose a challenge. And therefore, it requires one to ensure that we have champions that would reach out to other agencies in the region to make them understand the value that the harmonization process brings, especially when it comes to the savings from the reviews that are done jointly, regionally, as compared to each individual countries doing their individual review of the dossier. So understanding of the value of regional harmonization, commitment and leadership by heads of agencies is very, very critical. The issue that we also need to deal with is the political support that is needed to approve the fee structure. For example, from the evaluation of the EAC harmonization project in 2017, it was very clear that we needed to come up with a fee structure to ensure that the initiative is financed through a regional coordination fee. But to date, we are yet to see that happen. And therefore, there is need to really continue advocacy and make sure that there is a fee structure that has been approved that will be able to absorb the cost for coordination of the joint activities, and eventually maybe, if possible, as the EAC plans to move to either the EAC Medicines Agency, then those could be taken up by such an institution if at all to be established. We have some work to do when it comes to advocating for a sustainable financing mechanism for a regional initiative.
You just described the sustainability plan, and also in the papers, this concept of the industry fees becoming really a prominent feature of efforts to make the initiative sustainable. Do you see any risks in terms of some of these costs being passed on to patients, because the industry then would be paying fees at the regional level for some of these services, and then when they have to get the marketing authorization issued at the national level, they have to pay some additional fees there. Is there a risk that some of these fees could end up being passed on to the patients, and that the cost of medicines becomes higher and access becomes constrained because of this? And if this is a risk, what is the perspective of NIPAD and the region in terms of mitigating these concerns?
When it comes to the risk of passing over the cost to patients, especially when it comes to the fees that are being imposed at regional level, this is something that has been talked about. It requires more discussion to see how best that can be managed. But I wouldn't say that the risk is high, but rather discussions are needed by all the stakeholders to make sure that the cost is not passed on to patients. We need to have a conversation. You know, after these publications have come out, we need to have further conversation to see what are the different stakeholders saying and how best can these risks be mitigated.
When you look at the papers, they show that, in fact, the ESC initiative had a huge impact on the timelines, that the marketing application timelines reduced from roughly 24 months and even more in some of the countries to about 8 to 14 months between 2015 and 2017 when it was evaluated over that three-year timeframe. It's almost 50% reduction in terms of the timelines for products that went through the new joint assessment procedure, as compared to the previous national timelines. Can you point to specific tasks or processes or activities that allowed for the halving of this time? Because that was quite significant. What were the things that led to that significant reduction?
One of the things that actually has contributed to such a reduction of timelines is the adoption of the CTD format by all the EAC partner states. You may recall that before this initiative was launched in the EAC, each country had different requirements, different formats for dossier submission. And therefore, adopting the CTD was really a game changer in terms of how now the countries were in a position to receive applications that were kind of in a similar format. So that is one. In addition to that, you also see the process of conducting joint review of dossier applications through an elaborate process, because they had a very elaborate joint product assessment pathway where you would have initial review by two assessors, and then thereafter you have the product is subjected to joint assessment, and then of course two agencies are assigned to perform an initial assessment and share their findings. And then it is discussed by all the EAC and MRIs via the joint assessment session. That in itself has also helped so much in reducing the timelines for review and subsequent approval process. In addition to joint assessment, the joint inspections as well, they also brought in some benefit to both the applicants and also the EAC NMRIs, because the NMRIs were now using a joint process, especially for a company that seeks to register a medicine in the region. They could definitely agree as a region to now conduct joint inspection of manufacturing sites and eventually, of course, come up with a report that would subsequently be considered by the committee that is dealing with registration and evaluation of products. So that process also has helped facilitate the timelines that the review process would take and eventually the approval. But of course, the EAC process also has helped the partners to proceed smoothly using the same application and relying upon the information and recommendation from the joint assessment or inspection, because now it is basically the experts agreeing to say, this is what we see from this product application, and therefore we consider this to be satisfactory for a marketing authorization. So when it comes to a country making a decision, it's easier. It's easier because they have participated in the regional process, and therefore the subsequent uptake of the recommendation by the countries becomes far, far much easier.
Now that the program has been running for a few years and a couple of products that have gone through the process and received marketing authorization at country level, the capacity to monitor and report drug reactions will be key for patient safety. Therefore, going forward, drug safety and quality surveillance will be an important priority for the ESC MRH initiative. How will the ESC initiative ensure heightened drug safety and quality surveillance?
When it comes to safety and quality surveillance for the EAC region, luckily, the Registration Harmonization Initiative has laid a very good ground, a foundation for other regulatory functions to be undertaken by member states. Naturally, this is a process that has taken quite a while, close to 5 years now since they started the discussion around the need to put in place safety and quality surveillance of medical products. So to date, as we speak already, the region has established regional expert working group for pharmacovigilance and post-marketing surveillance to address challenges that the region is facing in terms of limited systems to monitor safety and quality of medical products. But also, they have already developed an EAC compendia of harmonized guidelines for pharmacovigilance, which was approved by the Council of Health Ministers. That was in March last year, 2019. And of course, it was recommended for domestication by all the stakeholders, including the NMRIs, the industry, and public health programs. So this has already happened. But also, the EAC embarked on an EAC cross-border strategic plan for strengthening pharmacovigilance system to ensure safety of vulnerable and border population, which was actually developed. And of course, resources were mobilized to support its implementation, and they were able to get funding from USAID that has supported that plan. But also the region has developed standard operating procedures to support domestication of the compendium of the PV guidelines. And currently, as we speak this year, actually, they've been busy conducting virtual meetings to really validate the guidelines and SOPs so that they'll be in a position to eventually use the guidelines just as they did for registration of medicines. Last year, the expert working group was also able to do supportive supervision missions to healthcare facilities in the border points between Kenya and Tanzania to pilot the PV guidelines, tools, and procedures. And then, of course, the Forum of Heads of Agencies, they are planning to do a regional operation twice a year to curb the substandard and falsified medical products at high-risk distribution points in order to be able to support quality surveillance activities. Actually, the plan is to have one first regional operation before December this year. Another work that has happened in the region is that regional strategy to guide the implementation of post-marketing surveillance activities has already been developed, and they have already selected 5 antibiotics and done some post-marketing surveillance, and they were able to come up with results that ended up with some product recalls from the EAC partner states. They have quite a number of other plans to ensure that they have a robust system for quality and safety surveillance of medical products. So a lot is going on already in the region that is really positive, and all is needed is to ensure that we support them as we did initially with harmonization of our registration system.
Given the regional nature of the initiative and the fact that as the region is expanding, and you've described how they've expanded from the marketing authorization into the safety and quality surveillance elements, and then COVID also comes around, how has the experience of the current pandemic affected the roadmap of the ESC to be able to implement the plans that they had, both on the existing activities, but also the expansion into new areas, as you just described?
COVID-19 has actually been really a big challenge when it comes to implementation, not only of the EAC harmonization initiative, but I think across the globe. We have been heavily affected in terms of implementation of the various initiatives. For one, you find a situation where, you know, the region could not conduct the meetings that were initially planned, that were meant to be face-to-face meeting. And of course, they had to now resort into remote meetings. What we've seen is that the region has actually now started going virtual and doing joint reviews of products, because some of the guidelines were already approved, and it has become easier now for them to use the virtual platform to start looking into how to review applications for COVID-19 medical products. This is an area that is still challenging, and I think this is an area that also requires governments and partners to come together and see how best we can facilitate the work of the regulatory agencies through the regional process, because there are countries that are really struggling because of lack of capacity, especially when it comes to approving medical devices, in vitro diagnostics, PPEs. Some countries have very limited capacity. Luckily, we have guidance documents already in place, but I think it's time now to look into how the countries can do joint review of such applications so that it's easier for member states and MRAs to allow products to get into their markets. We should view this as work in progress. There's work that needs to happen. And I also believe we could take this as not only a challenge, but also as an opportunity to expand the scope rather faster to regulation of medical devices so that the countries can benefit, as just as they did for registration of generic medicine.
You mentioned earlier the role of heads of agencies and how important it is to align with them. With all these endeavors and the enterprise of harmonizing regulatory and bringing countries to work together, work sharing, doing joint assessments and so on, how are you managing to keep the heads of agencies engaged, do the advocacy with the different levels of government that you need to talk to as the African Union Development Agency to keep the momentum and to keep the focus on the harmonization agenda and also the drive towards the Africa Medicines Agency? How are you coping with that?
COVID-19 has actually brought to the fore the need for more collaboration among heads of agencies. We have a situation where countries literally have no capacity to regulate some of these products. A case in point, for example, in the SADC region, we had a situation where Zambia and South Africa were able to do some reviews of some of these medical devices and IVDs and PPEs, and they realized that they needed to have more frequent engagement amongst the heads of agencies to discuss these issues of common interest, because other countries were struggling, because while you are in an emergency, you also have some culprits that want to take advantage of the vacuum that is being created by shortage of supplies, and therefore they want to just bring in whatever products that they can bring. And so without a robust regulatory system, you are bound to have a situation where substandard and falsified products get into the market. And therefore, the SADC Heads of Agencies Forum was very instrumental in guiding the various countries in the region on how best to deal with problems that we are facing in approving these products. That sets a very good example of the need for collaboration amongst the heads of agencies. And we are planning to advance that further, because it's not just in the SADC region. We see that in the ECOWAS region, where you have varied regulatory capacities amongst the member states. We see that in the Central Africa region. We see that in the Horn of Africa, IGAD region. Equally in the EACs, it is actually time for the heads of agencies to look into how they are collaborating. It's also time for the African Union to engage the member states through the regional economic communities to see what would be the best mechanism for collaboration amongst heads of agencies. Because currently, the structures that we have is such that the heads of agencies only meet once in 2 years. That's not reasonable time for proper engagement, especially emergencies like we've seen with COVID-19. So discussions are ongoing, and hopefully we'll come to a point where we'll see some changes in the governance structures, the governance formats, and where we see the heads of agencies taking more leadership, collaborating even more. It will also heighten the harmonization process, as we are also moving into establishing the African Medicines Agency.
These are all our questions for today, Margaret. Thank you very much for your time today, and continuing best wishes for your important work.
Thank you very much, David, for this discussion. Thank you.
For DIA Global Forum,
I am David Mukanga.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.